are listening to Teacher Talk It, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide. www.teachertalkit.co.uk. Like, subscribe and follow to stay in the know.
I guess the best thing for me is, you know, when you've got a child in your class or you work with a child and you've made a difference to them in the year and you celebrate the progress they've made in the year. I get to do that throughout their whole school journey. I get to see them when, from a parent concern or a teacher concern where they're like, oh, I think something, you know, needs to be done to support that child, through to that child going on to high school and doing well.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Sam Keyes, deputy head teacher and SENCO lead at St. Bede's Catholic Primary School in Newcastle. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are what SENCO is and what the role entails, workload pressures for SLT, and supporting SEN students transition into high school.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Sam Keyes. Sam is the deputy head teacher and SENCO lead at St. Bede's Catholic Primary School in the northeast of England. And it's a Friday evening, so we're going to be very concise here. Sam, how are you? And thank you for joining me.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. Just recovered from COVID and just bouncing back and back to work for a couple of days. So yeah, feeling okay.
Yeah, me too. I mean, we connected a couple of months ago through an LBQ Learning by Questions webinar, and we've tried to arrange this a few times. We've both suffered from COVID lately. How's the COVID challenge in schools? Still pretty much the same picture.
We're definitely hitting more staff at the minute than kids. So it doesn't seem to be rippling through kids as much, but we are suffering from a bit more staff absence than last time. So I would say that's the same, if not worse, maybe.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit more about the context of your school, just for people listening, because, you know, I've got a general understanding so far. But what about for new people, how would you describe the school?
Yeah, so we're a Catholic primary school, reception through to six, in a council estate in Newcastle, or just at the west end of Newcastle. It's a real mix, real melting pot of a school with kids from all sorts of backgrounds. We've got higher than average proportion of English as additional language, same for pupil premium, same for SEN. It's a really nice community school, slap bang, no grass or anything like that, right, you know, just a yard in the middle of it, an estate, but it's a real great place.
Yeah, it reminds me of my experiences of London, you know, a lot of secondary schools and you'd struggle to see a patch of grass. So you have to, you know, your sports hall's a real commodity, I suppose, and having, you know, kids keeping active, etc. So, it's, you know, it sounds a very challenging school. How many kids in the school?
We've got 212.
212. It sounds like quite an interesting place. And how long have you been there, Sam?
I've been there for, this is coming up to 4 years next month, so yeah.
Okay, great. Well, we'll come back to that in a second. A question I always ask all my listeners is, describe your 16-year-old self. Oh. What were you like at school?
16-year-old self, I was going through a real phase where I was anti-education, tricky things going on at home, and that really, really showed. I was that kid in the class that needed extra love and attention, but after it in the most bizarre of ways.
Right, okay, that's interesting. And so what happened after school, you know, can I just unpick how we got to the kind of teacher conversation? What happened after school?
Well, actually, that kind of links to that 16-year-old self. So there was a teacher in that time. It was when I was doing A-levels at sixth form, and it was Mr. Clifford, and he was the guy who asked the questions and took me under his wing type thing and made me feel like I needed to be there.
Right.
So I went on, he taught me psychology. So I went on and did a degree in psychology at university. And then it was sort of third year at university. We did a module about education and childhood studies. And I thought, you know what? I fancy a piece of that. Got in touch with my old primary school, did a couple of weeks work experience, started my training, and then that was
right,
it.
Wow. So university in Newcastle as well? Or?
No, I went to Preston. I was at the University of Central Lancashire.
Okay, great.
That was great. And then I did a skit in Newcastle after that, yeah.
And then teaching back in Newcastle?
Yeah. Got a job in the school that I trained in and stayed there for about 7 years.
Right, well, what a great story. And so there for 7 years, particularly key stage or year group?
Yeah, so that was a bigger school. That was a 1.5-form entry, so there was mixed classes. So I taught, the first class I taught was a year 4-5 class, and then did a couple of year 2-3 classes, which were interesting, being key stage 1 and key stage 2. Uh-huh. And then I got a little bit of an interest in the SEN side of things.
Right.
And then the Senko at our school left, and the job came up. And as you probably know, not many people put their hat in the ring for a Senko job.
It's a tough job, yeah.
I kind of wanted to see what it was like. So I took on that role as sort of an aspiring Senko, did the national award, and then got that job permanently as well. So, and I haven't, I've been hooked on Sen too, really, since
right.
then.
Fantastic. And I found in my experience, once people get into SEN, that's it. It becomes quite teaching's a vocation, as you'll know, but the SEN part becomes, it is something you live and breathe 24/7, isn't it? Did you then come to St. Bede's after that particular job?
Yeah, so I was Senko in class teacher, and somebody sort of suggested that I went on some aspiring leadership courses, and I thought about it, and then one of the bits of feedback I got in my first session was that they said I'd pigeonholed myself. I was too SEN focused, so I couldn't be deputy
nice
head.
Nice feedback.
And I was a bit worried. I was like, well, I do want to go into school leadership, and I do want to maintain this sort of passion for SEN. And so then I thought about whether I moved to specialist provision, and then I was flicking through the advert, and I saw deputy head teacher, class teacher, and Senko, and I thought, that's a bit of me, and here I am.
And for someone, maybe listening who's interested in teaching or from outside of education, particularly a parent, I know this is a big question, but what is the role of a Senko? What kind of things are you doing strategically on a termly basis? And then how does it look on a daily basis? So there's lots of questions there. So what's Senko? What's it look like strategically and day to day?
Yeah, so Senko is, that is a big question. Senko is a special educational needs and disabilities coordinator. I always think it's a ridiculous role. I like to say that I am a champion for the kids who need that extra bit, specifically regarded to those additional needs and disabilities. So day to day, my role is the oversight. I'm making sure that the kids that need stuff have got stuff. The teachers are teaching them to how, in the best possible way for those children to excel and achieve their potential. I'm a barrier remover. You know, if there's something in the way, I need to be there supporting teachers, getting that barrier out of the way. I'm looking at interventions, what extra things we can do outside the classroom and in the classroom. I'm monitoring their progress. I'm working with parents to try and find out those little nuggets of information that are going to completely change the day for that child. Maybe, from the tiniest thing like how their morning routine was through to, whether they've lost their spelling book or, whatever else, through to the really struggle in a noisy environment.
Sure.
I'm there to try and make it as easy as possible.
And give us a kind of picture of the kind of strategic things that you're doing termly, annually, as paperwork, funding, that type of stuff.
Yeah, so typically the majority of kids fall under what we call SEN support, and that means it's school just picks that up within their own budget. Some children qualify for extra funding, but that requires quite a bit of paperwork. We have termly targets set. That's another sort of round of paperwork. There's lots of meetings with other professionals, reports, referrals. It's quite paperwork heavy.
Mm-hmm. Without putting people off, what's the best part of the job? You said it's that need stuff, and you kind of give the stuff that the kids need, and you kind of unlocking those barriers. And I guess we can't go into specific case studies, but I'm sure you have lots of great moments in your role. Could you give us a little insight for people listening, kind of what you do?
Yeah. So I guess the best thing for me is, you know, when you've got a child in your class, or you work with a child, and you've made a difference to them in the air, and you celebrate the progress they've made in the air, I get to do that throughout their whole school journey. I get to see them when, from a parent concern or a teacher concern, where they're like, oh, I think something, you know, needs to be done to support that child, through to that child going on to high school and doing well. And recently, obviously, without going into details, I received feedback from a high school about a child who's really, really thriving. He's not just doing well, he's thriving. And
that's,
I think,
amazing.
Without our support at primary and without that strong transition, that might not have even been the case. That could have been a school exclusion. It could have been something else. So I get that progress journey, but I get it times by 6 or 7 sometimes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm speaking very loosely here. You know, I don't have any hard evidence, but I kind of stick my neck out and think we should do more at secondary level to let primary schools know how certain kids are doing. And I know, you know, I've never been a Senko and I've never worked very closely with Senkos, but I know that they probably do that, and much of that information at a whole school leadership team is probably lost. Any tips for secondary schools to do that better?
Yeah, what I make a point of is letting the secondary schools know that I want to be at the first review in September or October, the autumn term, and I really insist on it, and I'm like a dog with a bone. I have to be there. And when you've got your face in there, and when they when they can see that you've got that knowledge of that child, they'll keep inviting you back. So if I'm speaking to secondary schools, just let us in. I know you do it differently. I know secondary schools work in a completely different way. Our local secondary school is so different to our setup. But let us have a go at telling you what's worked, because it might, you know, answer a few questions for you and solve a few problems.
And in terms of your role, just I guess a last question on it, I suppose. What's the kind of career trajectory for someone like you that could either go, you know, obviously headship next, or is there a more specialised field you can get into down the SEN road?
It's something that I guess I'm at that crossroads myself, thinking about what is next. I think ultimately for me, I'd love to be a head teacher. I'd love that whole school complete oversight. However, there's been roles that I've seen advertised where it's specialist, or whether it's consultancy work with regards to SEN. I've looked at those too. I don't know. At the minute, I don't want to leave a classroom, and that's where I'm at. So I'm quite happy with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, if I just change the conversation slightly, we know workload's a particular focus of mine, and I know COVID has got in the way, but is it possible to kind of think before COVID, what would be the workload pressures for teachers in general from your perspective in the Northeast, and perhaps as a Senko, what are the kind of general pressures that you face?
General pressures obviously vary from SLT to SLT and school to school, don't they? The demands that are placed upon different teachers through policies and practices and things like that. Generally, the bugbears are obviously, you know, your mark, and that's something that some schools are still quite archaic with in their terms of their marking and feedback policies. And our school's fortunate enough to have moved, you know, we're not fully away from that, but we're moving away from the, you know, marking 32 books per lesson. Scrutinies, book scrutinies and things like that, and lesson observations that are landing on your door at the moment's notice, and feeling like you need to teach a whiz-bang lesson every lesson. I was talking on a Primary Education Voices podcast the other week, and I said, I'm not the best teacher, so why should I try and do these lessons that are not me? What I do, my bread and butter is good, and that's good enough. If I'm consistently good, I'm a happy teacher.
And how do you, as a school leader, you know, I throw in that word standards, how do you share that ethos with the rest of your teaching staff, knowing that, you know, what you do day in, day out, when no one's watching, is good teaching, without this kind of show and tell performance or that burden of you're a great teacher if you mark all your books?
I really try and lead by example, I guess. So when you know, I'm more than happy. I know COVID's put a blocker on that recently, but I'm more than happy to let teachers into my classroom, and I'll just teach. I'll just teach normally, and I'll comment to them about how I'm not doing anything different. This is just a getting every single resource there is available in there to make it look 10 times better. I just teach. And when I'm doing a book scrutiny or whether we're doing a moderation session together, my books are my books. I haven't, you know, I haven't cherry picked them. I haven't, you know, made them shiny and polished them up. My books are my books. And I'm really vocal about that. So I guess I'm authentic about it in the hope that they'll see that, well, if he's doing it, then we can do it too, I guess.
And if we go back to that marking policy, which we know is a headache for a lot of people, what kind of things do you still need to tackle? You know, you mentioned the, moving away from the notion of having to mark everything. Where is your feedback policy at the moment?
So we're in the sort of the limbo of we are obviously looking at the book still. There's some sort of light touch marking, and then in some cases we'll call it feed forward, so next step stuff. But not in the majority of cases. It's the few pupils that need that next step. It's the idea of who are you marking for? Are you marking for somebody else to look at the books? Are you marking for that child's learning to progress? And if you're not doing it for the learning to progress, you shouldn't do it anyway, I guess.
No, absolutely. I mean, you'll know my thoughts. That feedback, feedback, feed forward, the verbal, written, non-verbal. There's lots. Part of my role for people listening is getting to see all these fantastic school policies and trying to make them a little bit more refined to help everybody. One or two ideas, Sam, on what wellbeing initiatives are you doing with your staff to promote teacher mental health and wellbeing? Is there anything that you're really proud of that you do that staff say this is what makes working at St. Bede's a great thing?
We had a session actually a few weeks ago. It was, we're a Catholic school. It was a prayer session actually. And the person leading it asked us to sort of think about the atmosphere of school. And they imagined us to walk around the school and say what we thought. And the head and I were sat there obviously knowing what we wanted to say and what we hoped people would say. But in those moments, it's really good to listen. And they all talked about the atmosphere, how they feel it can go to each other with anything, school-related or otherwise. They all talked about how they felt we're a team. Nothing was too much. You know, if somebody was struggling, they would, it was that wraparoundness. And I guess that's complete culture. That's not just a gimmick thing. We do the gimmicky things as well. We give an early finish on a Friday, hence why I'm sat in that.
Those things are important. But that's good feedback from your staff.
Oh, yeah, totally. And that's the sort of stuff you want to hear, because you're not doing that for a tick in a box. You're doing that because, you know yourself, if you've got happy staff who feel safe and confident, you're going to get better teaching, aren't you? You're going to get better outcomes.
Exactly. So let me put you in a corner then. Give me, in 30 seconds, why I should work at St. Bede's.
In 30 seconds. Okay, so you should work at St. Bede's because we've got a forward-thinking leadership team that are really looking at what can be changed to benefit staff and pupils. We've got a really healthy budget at the moment, so you know you could be an upper
case.
There
you go. Well, there's a positive.
We've got early finish on a Friday, and we've got staff who genuinely care about you, and the kids are the best.
Great. And one more. What's professional development like for your staff? It's not one size fits all, and you know, bog standard dry stuff, is it? And no sign of a lunch. Get tea and coffee on inset day.
Oh yes, and lunch. Yeah, we let staff come to us with their needs. We're constantly talking about where they want to go next. Performance management is it's a conversation. It's two people are in that situation and they're talking about what they want to do next and what could be best for school, but what's going to be best for them. We're really about growing our leaders as well. You know, with the hope that one day that they'll either take over from us or they'll fly off elsewhere and do great things.
Fantastic. And I'm trying to keep things punchy for the podcast. Yeah, yeah. I've got one more question because it's just interesting. You know, I suffered from the London bubble as a teacher for 30 years. I've lived in Newcastle for a year of my life. And as you'll know, I travel to schools all across the country, but I don't get to the Northeast as much as I'd like to. But what's it like to teach in the Northeast? Give listeners a flavour.
The kids are funny. They will tell you it how it is. They won't, you know. Yeah, if there's something on their mind, they'll tell you. brutally honest at times. Yeah. You know, today they told me that they thought I'd maybe had a little bit too much chocolate while I was off with COVID. They're really keen to learn. They want to be there. They're mad on the extracurricular stuff. Our uptake for after school club is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, also, you know, demographically, you know, Newcastle's a great city, but you're close to the sea, you're close to the border, the countryside, you know, what else is there to offer?
We've got everything. The city is amazing, but 10 minutes from the city, 15 minutes from our school, you've got the beach. If you drive 20 minutes the other way, you're in complete rural Northumberland. You could literally go from farm to city to beach in the space of an hour. It's great.
Incredible. I was lucky enough to be in, is it Consett, not so long ago, up there working in a Peru. So, yeah, fabulous countryside. Right, so we've got our 20-minute barrier, Sam. If you're listening to a podcast, you know I'm going to throw loads of quick-fire questions at you and try and catch you out and put you on the spot. So no pausing or hesitating. I'm going to try and sum up our conversation and throw the odd question to you. So let's start off with... let's tell listeners what your plans are for the weekend.
My plans for the weekend, I've got an RE course all day tomorrow, and then I'm going to watch Newcastle on Sunday.
Okay, and is it Newcastle for the win, or is it Chelsea, head or heart?
My dad is a massive Chelsea fan, so head and heart say Chelsea, to be honest.
Okay, and was Alan Shearer good as the Newcastle fans say he was, or is it all a bit of an illusion?
Better.
There you go. What's on your leadership desk back at school for Monday morning? What are you working on?
I've got three referrals for education health and care plans to be finished.
Right, there's a headache. What book are you reading at the moment?
I am reading Babies and Toddlers for Men.
Crikey, that sounds interesting. Finish this sentence. If I were Education Secretary of State, I would...
Start again.
So, a piece of advice for someone who wants to become a Senko.
Use the parents. They're a great. Okay. They're a great.
Use the parents. Top tips for anyone wanting to go to Preston University.
Check it out first.
Okay. top tips for doing a psychology degree.
Be critical in your thinking.
Okay, if you met Mr. Clifford again, what would you say to him?
I'd say thank you. I've already thanked him. I went on a training course with Sir John Jones, and he said, reach out to the teacher that made the difference to you. And I thanked him, and he replied, and it was amazing.
Oh, that is amazing. I've been lucky enough to do that. I've got my Mr. Baldy. He follows me on Instagram still, so it's lovely to still have a connection with him. Okay, what's your best... thing that you're most proud of, kind of career achievement?
I had an article published in Nathan's Connect magazine and was nominated for an award.
Brilliant. Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
Paul Watson. He's Paul Watt 5 on Twitter, and he's really modest. He's a really fantastic teacher, but he really doesn't shout about it.
Right, I'll chase Paul down. What's the simplest barrier a teacher can remove for a child?
The amount of time that they're stood talking and doing nothing else.
Okay, nice. Easy one, where can listeners find out more about your Connect online or school?
I'm on Twitter at @MrKeys_DHT.
And then a big question to finish. What would you hope to be your legacy, Sam?
I want kids to see me like I saw Mr. Clifford.
Right, well, there you go. So, Sam, thank you. Listeners, Sam Keys, Deputy Head Teacher at St. Bede's Catholic Primary School up in Newcastle. Sam, thank you for your time. I'm really glad that we finally got this podcast sorted. And I'm definitely going to come and knock on the school door when I get up to Newcastle soon.
Yeah,
always have a good weekend.
You too.
Cheers, Sam. Thank you.
Thank you so much. See you later.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.